Listening to WDRT. This is The Friendly Show. My name is Andrew. I'm here with my buddy Pete. Pete Hodapp. Pete, how are you, man?
Hey there. I'm just Jim Dandy.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Great.
Getting there.
Okay. Well, this is the Friendly Show. I spent a lot of time explaining it 2 weeks ago because it was the first one. It's the second one, so I should still explain it, right? This is a new show where we listen to a little bit of music. Pete brought in some music, I brought in some music, and we play it, talk about it a little bit, talk to each other a little bit about what's going on in our lives, and it's an hour of your life that you'll never get back, so that's the guarantee here at The Friendly Show. First off, we heard a ballad for Joe Louis from the Crusaders, that was one of mine, and then Long Division from Fugazi. Pete, let's start there.
Okay.
Tell me why that was one that made the list for you.
This was really, really hard for me.
Uh-huh.
I gotta say.
Yeah, you told me that a lot.
It was really hard for me to, like, get it down to 15 minutes of music or whatever.
Yeah.
But Fugazi was very, very important to me in my life. And I felt like if I didn't include them, it wouldn't be right.
It's sort of like just this is more on like a lifetime achievement award situation where they did enough to you over the course of
they totally changed my life,
right? So you had to pay some respect.
There was a time when my friends and I would follow them like the dead.
Is that right?
Oh, for sure.
Did you have a name?
What do you mean?
Like Deadheads?
No.
You didn't.
But like,
you were never tempted to come up with a pun-based name.
No, I don't. I could do it now.
Fugazers?
That's
just off the top of my head.
That's pretty lame.
Well, the name of the show is The Friendly Show, so just calibrate your expectations accordingly.
I mean, they played in Minneapolis a lot.
Uh huh.
But we would also go to like Milwaukee, Chicago.
Hold on, Fugazers. That's better.
Sure.
Fugazers. That's also not bad.
Now.
Yeah.
At this point.
Right. Now you're a food geezer. Yeah. You're fully a. Yeah. Yeah. Well, half and half.
I think, like, musically, mm-hmm. I really always respected them, and I thought mm-hmm. that they were, like, mm-hmm. kind of incredible.
Yeah.
And underrated. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's it.
And is that your favorite song of theirs?
No.
No. Just the one that you felt.
It was one I just got in there and.
Sure.
I was also looking at time.
Yeah. I put the ask for people on the show is 15 minutes of music. So the math here essentially is 15 minutes of music from Pete, 15 minutes of music from me. and then 30 minutes of conversation.
Sure.
That gets you to an hour. And like I said, you won't get it back.
Right.
Yeah.
So just quick background.
Please.
I had like four shows mm-hmm. on this station.
We were going to get to that, but yeah. This is great. You go through your resume.
We don't have to.
I would love to hear, because I don't even know. I know the one that you did when I started doing a show.
Which is Free to Be Z and Me?
Correct, yes. Okay. Yeah. That was nominally with your daughter, but she bailed pretty quickly.
She did bail pretty quickly, which I'm not surprised. You know, whatever.
No, I mean, she's a kid. Right. It's a very different thing to commit to a weekly radio show when you're a child.
I mean, I've been involved with the station since it was in a closet in the Landmark Center.
Since its inception.
Yes.
Is what I'm hearing.
And I'd made some of the first graphics for the uh-huh. station, yes. like the first logo for the mm-hmm. station, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going like bragging rights here.
No, I think it's important for people that maybe are new to the city, you know, to the community, to know, you know, kind of what your background is. So, what was your first show?
Oh God, I don't know what it was called.
You don't know what it was called.
Well, what's also pathetic about all this is that I've had like four different shows, uh-huh. and each time I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Right. You give up.
Then I bail.
You kind of wear. Like, it's not that you bail immediately.
No.
I mean, the last one you did for a few years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I've done Juice and Snack for 4 years now, and there are some times where I'm like, I would like not to do this anymore.
Right.
I can't give it up. You know.
Yeah.
It's too hard to think about like not having it mm-hmm. permanently. But there are times, there are certainly weeks, you know, and I mean, I'm pretty nice to myself. Like, I'll take a week off every month or every other month.
Yeah.
And just kind of recharge, you know, or like if I've got travel for work or a specifically busy week, it's like, hey, I just can't get to it. Mm-hmm. So I do take that liberty, which helps vacations, you know, but I know what you mean about the grind of making a radio show.
Right. And there were times when I would record two or three in a row.
Right, to kind of get ahead.
And get ahead of it.
Yeah.
Or pre-record and whatever. But, like, I think also, like, the job I have currently was, like, the final straw of, like, I can't.
Right.
I need to not do this for a while.
Right. And we were talking about your job a little bit before we went on the air, and you don't want to talk about it much on the air. But tell people what you do.
I work with developmentally disabled folks at the public school.
Yeah, it's an incredibly admirable profession and a demanding one.
So they're high school.
Right.
The high school age part of that is also like incredibly important to the story.
Right.
So if I was like with middle school or like grade school developmentally disabled, that would be one thing. But like high school is a totally different animal.
It's a specific challenge. Yeah.
It is. So, and it takes a lot out of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the thing that kind of put me over the edge.
Yeah. When you have, in general in life, when you have a work, you know, challenge like that, that diminishes your ability to participate in your life outside of work, it's very hard to come to terms with.
Yeah.
Because there's kind of not a good answer, right? Because it's a job and we all need to work with very few exceptions. So it becomes a real challenge of what do you let go of? And I think sometimes, you know, this sort of volunteer thing, which can be, you know, I think often on net, like a positive, right?
Yeah.
Still, it does take a lot of time and energy and just mental capacity that maybe isn't available if your work life is very demanding. So I understand that being the time to say, well, that's when I've got to let it go.
Yeah. When pretty much, I mean, but I miss it terribly.
Right.
At the same time.
Yeah. And we'll see. Maybe Pete makes a comeback. He might make a comeback.
Number five.
Yeah. Could be show number five right around the horizon. So I talked with Neil Olson last week. And of course, all three of us are friends.
Yes.
And I told this story last week. And I'm just going to bring it up again because I'm self-aggrandizing in that way. When I started the show Juice and Snack, I asked for your input, and you guys had a bunch of bad suggestions. And so I thought I would just check with you if you've done any more thinking about, like, you know, what for this show.
Are you talking about like name wise bad suggestions?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
It doesn't matter.
No, I know. That's why I'm bringing it up, because it doesn't matter.
Like, the name part doesn't matter.
No,
when
but...
When it really comes down to it.
I of mean, course.
The name of my last show was Free to Be Z and Me. Like,
what yeah.
the, like, who can relate to that? Like,
no one.
Yeah, exactly.
No one. But I just wanted to give you the opportunity on air to pitch any suggestions for the name of this show, even though it already has a name.
Well, I think it's fine.
Oh, okay. You don't have any notes?
No, I think the name of the show is fine.
All right.
Like, I really think the content is what's gonna. No, I'm not kidding.
The content could use some work, but the name.
No,
is
no,
fine.
No. I'm not saying the content needs some work. I'm saying the content is what's gonna make people
of
come
course,
back and
of course,
back.
Yeah.
It has right. nothing to do with me.
Right, right, right. No, a good show with a bad name is better than a bad show with a good name.
And people will come back and forth.
Sure.
They will. Right. They will come back for a bad show with a, or a good show with a bad name.
Right. Right.
They will.
Right. They'll just refer to it as that show that's on Mondays at 6, rather than saying the name out loud. They'll just kind of, I don't want to say that.
I don't think it's that bad, though.
No, it's not. It's not. But it's... I'm saying, to your point about bad, I mean, there are, whether it's here or anywhere in the world, there are things that have bad names. And I've noticed for myself, when something has a dumb name, like if there's a restaurant that has a dumb name, I will often say like, oh, that, you know, that Indian place or, you know, whatever, like that. You know, the new sandwich spot, you know, on whatever, Monroe Street, right? You'd say that instead of saying whatever dumb name they chose.
Go look at WFMU and their roster. And, like, there
it's
are
actually
some,
not a bad idea. Maybe that'll be a segment.
There are some terrible names.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't matter.
Well.
Because, like, you get hooked on the content.
Yeah.
And you come back for the content.
All right. Well, this is a tease for the next segment, because Pete and I might go to the WFMU website on the break here and look at some show names and make fun of them. That might be something that we do. All right, so let's jump back into the music. It's another one of mine and then one of yours. It's the way that they stack together. It's nothing personal, Pete. But
no, I won't take it personal.
We're going to play a song called Yellow Queen first. You're listening to WDRT. This is The Friendly Show. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back.
sad and still, and why my brow is darkened like the clouds upon the hill. Running your ponies closer, and I'll tell to you my tale of Utah Care, my partner, in his last ride on the trail. We rode the range together, had rode it side by side. I loved him like a brother, and I wept when Utah died. We were rounding up one morning when work was almost done, when on his side the cattle started on a frightened run. Underneath the saddle that the boss's daughter rode, Utah that very morning had placed a bright red robe, so the saddle might ride easy for Lenore, his little friend. And it was this red blanket that brought him to his end. The blanket was now dragging behind her on the ground. The frightened cattle saw it and charged it with a bound. Lenore then saw her danger and turned her pony's face, and leaning in the saddle, tied the blanket to its place. But in leaning, lost her balance, fell in front of that wild tide. Lay still, Lenore, I'm coming, were the words that Utah cried. His faithful pony saw her and reached her with a bound. I thought he'd been successful and raised her from the ground. But the weight upon the saddle had not been felt before. His back sent snap like thunder, and he fell by Lenore. Picking up the blanket, he swung it o'er his head and started across the prairie. Lay still, Lenore, he said. When he got the stampede turned and saved Lenore, his friend, then turned to face the cattle and meet his fatal end. His sixth gun flashed like lightning, the report rang loud and clear. As the cattle rushed and killed him, he dropped the leading steer. On his funeral morning, I heard the preacher say, I hope we'll all meet Utah at the roundup far away. Then they wrapped him in a blanket that saved his little friend. And it was this red blanket that brought him to his end.
You're listening to WDRT. This is The Friendly Show. I'm Andrew, joined by Pete. And we heard Yellow Queen from Davar, and then we heard Utah Carol from the great Marty Robbins. We were talking about that while we were listening to it, Pete, and your long, long relationship with that album specifically.
I've been listening to that album since I was in, like, grade school, for sure. Like, third grade? Fourth grade, maybe? But it's one of those things where you like, grow up listening to it, and then years later, you're like, wait a minute, I really actually like this. And then you keep it forever.
Right, right. Because there's some music that we all have this experience where you grow up listening to it a lot, and then you listen to it as an adult, and you can't believe that you had the capacity ever to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, we've both had that experience, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, my dad played a lot of good music when I was a kid.
Oh, sure, same.
But
when you're a kid, you just have...
Dad's playing music.
Well, and like, not fully developed taste. So yeah, there's some stuff that hits your ear right, because it's maybe a little bit more like kids' music, I would say, like a little bit more simplistic. And then that same simplicity, when you're older, if it's not done artfully, can be grating. Like, I would say Marty Robbins is simple, but in a very artful way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, the band I'm thinking of, and I am going to just absolutely throw them right under the bus here, is Toad the Wet Sprocket, Pete.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't want to talk about
that. No, we don't have to.
What year is that Marty Robbins? It's like...
1959.
Like, is it 59?
It is. That's what...
I thought it was older than
that. The player there says.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, that's when the album came out, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff, when it was recorded, is a different story.
All right.
So that's Marty Robbins, and one of Jim Hallberg's favorites. So a little bit of a shout out to Jim as well.
Yep, that was one of the things that we bonded over when I first started volunteering here, was that I appreciated that album, and he loved that album, and he couldn't find a lot of people who loved that album.
I know it's not pledge drive time anymore. We exceeded our goal, so we don't need to necessarily ask for money. But I will say that one of the great things about volunteering at this station is the music conversations you get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's really satisfying to be amongst a group of other people that have similarly, I would say, not always weird, but eclectic taste.
Yep.
You know, that, and then like you, to this point where you kind of see eye to eye with someone on something, and or they play something that maybe you've not heard of that really scratches an itch for you, or you know, vice versa. That's always such a rewarding experience to share music in this sort of way. So again, like, there's no pitch here, but it's just, it is one of the cool things about being involved with the station.
No, I get you. Like, there, I had a promo at one point that was like, there is no bad music.
I remember this promo.
You do?
I do, yeah. Because I was like, I don't know, Pete.
Well,
Toad the Wet Sprocket would argue with you on that one.
There's just different kinds of music, and some of it is well made and some of it is not.
Right. I do think that's true, but a younger version of me had more trouble with that sentiment.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Total change of subject here. I did look at the WFMU lineup while we were listening to music, and there's a few clunkers, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. So, but your point stands about naming shows. I just don't want people to wonder what happened to that thread. You know, mm-hmm. Can't leave people wondering. But I wanted to talk to you about something that's happening with me, Pete, if you don't mind, because you know already that I went to Chicago to look at a car this weekend.
Yep.
And didn't end up buying it.
Correct.
Specifically because they did like all the bad stuff dealerships sometimes do when you're trying to buy a used car. And so I walked away, which I was like proud of myself for doing, right? Because I have definitely, so I've bought one when I was a teenager, so it doesn't count because my dad did it. But like as an adult, I've bought two cars at a dealership, and I know I got screwed the first time. Like I know in retrospect, I can't imagine how bad it was, but I just know I left feeling like, well, that didn't go well.
Well, I mean, isn't that the whole?
Right, that's built in.
That's their approach.
It's built in. Yes, correct. The dealership right. You will never pay the price you think you're going
to
pay.
It's just, how bad are you going to get?
Correct.
Screwed?
Yeah. And so then the second time I think was a little bit better. It was a local place and I think it went better. I don't have a very clear memory of it. I mean, who remembers this stuff? So, but I just had the goal in mind with this experience of just like not, you know, I mean, my day job is essentially a sales job. Like I negotiate in my professional, you know, capacity. Like I should be able to hang with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so today they reached out. You know, and we're like, are you still interested in the car? And I said,
this is the dealership you walked from.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I said, I am. Yeah.
Got to know when to hold them.
That's right. Well, and I'm driving back from Chicago. I had plenty of time to think about what I did right and wrong, you know. And so I realized like I wasn't clear enough in my terms and I didn't, you know, like I walked away from the last offer. I should have countered one more time. So I just a few things that I wanted to do differently. And so when they reached out, I said, yeah, I am still interested in the car because I am. I mean, it is, you know, if you can get it through all the BS around it, it's a pretty good deal. And you know, I want to do this, you know. So I've been, you know, resuming negotiations, but it's easier now because I'm at home. I'm not in the dealership, right? But they're still trying to monkey with me. You know what I mean? Like they're still pulling negotiating tactics on me, even from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question for you is, because I can't find an answer to this myself. Like, I know, like this feels a little bit like, you know, there's that old fable of, I can't remember what all goes into it, but it's essentially like, you know, something and there's a scorpion and he's like, you knew I was a scorpion, you know, the whole time. Like, what did you expect? And then everybody dies. That's my recap of the fable. And it feels like that sort of a situation here, right? You know what I mean? Like, because they, like, essentially, like, I would have to go back to Chicago to pick the car up. And I kind of, like, part of me is like, I just have to know that if I do that, they're going to try and pull something.
Well, yeah. So what is the question exactly?
What should I guess, Well, because like now there's other ways to buy a car, right? Like I could go to Carvana or one of these places that like they don't do, you know, it's a different model, right? The prices are higher, but if you like you can buy the car online and then just arrange a time to go pick it up. Like you do not have to negotiate with anybody. You know, it's essentially a private party sale.
And so the prices are higher because you are not negotiating.
I think essentially, yeah, they've figured out what the margin is that they need. Uh-huh. And so that's what they charge you.
Okay.
So I could do that anytime I want, you know, and avoid this.
Yeah.
Or I could try and, you know, get this to a point where I feel like I'm actually comfortable with it. But what I'm saying is that possible or is it inevitable that at the end I'm going to end up feeling stupid?
Oh, yeah. I think it's inevitable that at the very end you're not going to feel like you got like a completely fair shake.
Right.
And also, you know, taking into consideration that like at this point you're driving to Chicago multiple times. Like,
well, yeah.
That is not like...
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
And...
Luckily, I don't value my time at all.
Well, it's not the time. It's, you know, the gas is involved as well.
Sure. No. But yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
I mean, there's no right answer here. I just was curious your thoughts because it struck me, like, driving in here to do the show, I was just thinking, like, should I just, like, walk away from this under the assumption that I'm not going to have a good time? And by contrast, even if I pay more, it will feel cleaner. Mm. To be like, they said that was the price, that's the price I paid, and I'm moving on.
All right, two things.
Great.
One, I don't think anybody ever feels like they get a completely good deal.
On a car. It's not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Second, I feel like the people who do are buying like hyper locally.
Mm. Right, with somebody they maybe trust or know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a good point. And I have kind of backed myself into a corner here because I'm trying to buy an electric car.
Yeah.
And so local stock is limited.
Sure.
to put it mildly.
Yeah.
So, and even if you look at Madison, they are more expensive. Like apparently there's a car bubble in Madison is what my research has led me to understand.
Okay.
So like you're going to pay more for a used car in Madison than you would in Milwaukee, Chicago, or Minneapolis.
That kind of makes sense to me. It's a college, like
a high. Yeah, it's a little bit of a captive audience.
Well, it's a college town.
And people are doing all right. Yeah.
A college town. Yeah. And then it's greeny.
Exactly.
Sort
right.
of. Yeah.
Right. So I've put a little bit of this on myself by wanting something fairly specific and then being in a geographical location where I don't have a lot of great options. Like if I lived in California, we wouldn't be having this guy. It'd be done already.
Yeah. Well, another way to look at it is... Looking for something so specific is going to it's going to make everything smaller.
Right, shrinks your market, which raises your price.
Well, there's the price part, but it also your options.
Right.
So
right. Yeah.
Think of how bad it would be if you were trying to look for a used car. Period. You know, like the fact that you're looking for something so specific.
I see. Yeah.
In some ways.
No, it is. Right. It is. But it's just, I do think because of that, then like I think the chances of getting a deal are lower.
Oh yeah.
Because you're looking at essentially one type of car. And honestly, at this point, don't let the people at this dealership hear this, but I've kind of zeroed in on one car, like one make and model, which makes it really hard.
Especially like with what's going on as far as gas prices go. Like,
well, that's the impetus for the whole thing.
Well, for you, yeah.
But yeah.
What I'm saying is like...
But that works both ways. Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
You're right. And a lot of the cars that I've been looking at have sold before I could get to see them. So that is genuinely what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't want to make this totally into a current affairs show, but that is definitely informing what's going on in the background.
We'll just start a little altar for you when we get home. And...
Oh, yeah. If you could burn some... What do you burn for a successful used car transaction?
I don't burn anything.
Oh, you don't burn anything?
I burn cats. Oh. You know, like whatever is around.
Do you say cats?
Sure. There's a lot of stray cats in my neighborhood.
Oh, Pete. Don't say that on the radio.
Probably not.
Don't say that. This show is going out, man. It's going out on the air. All right, I think we're that'll probably wrap up this segment.
<Fine. laughs>
So the next one here is one of yours. We're going to kick off with a song called is it called Insecure Kids?
Yeah.
And the band is Big Blood.
Correct.
Okay, right on. So we're going to jump in and play that one now. This is The Friendly Show on WDRT.
I heard Why didn't you say?
It's the Friendly Show on WDRT. We heard Insecure Kids from Big Blood, and then we heard Milk and Honey from Jackson Frank. And I'm here with Pete, and we're talking, and we're friends. And that's the conceit of the show. So take it away, Pete.
Oh, what am I taking away?
I don't know, man. we were talking during the break about how it doesn't feel like an hour is enough time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, because this is the way that these things work, as I'm kicking into this last segment, I'm looking at you and talking and realizing I don't know what to talk about. So it happened very quickly that I went from like 2 hours easy to, oh no, I can't think what to talk about. Because my big thing was the car thing, and that's done. So now I'm kind of out of things. I do have a question for you.
Okay.
And I did this to Neil last week, and it was in the last segment. It's a serious question.
Okay.
So, I'm going to put you on the spot, and if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but I think you'll be comfortable talking about it. You've lived in Viroqua, in this area, for a long time,
yeah,
relative to a lot of people, sure, that live in this area, yep, right? You first came to this area in what, 2000 and...
I don't know. I've been here... I always... the way I always do this is like my oldest daughter is this old.
Right.
And she was 3 when I moved here. So I've been here 25 years.
Okay. So there you go. So 25 years.
Yeah.
A quarter century.
Oh, I guess so.
And, you know, we talk about this a lot personally. How much, like, because I was away for a few years. I lived in North Carolina from 22 to last year, so 3 years. And when I came back, I was like, whoa, a lot had changed. And I still feel that way.
Yeah.
But on the larger scale, right, when you're talking about 25 years, a lot has changed. So my question to you, Pete, is what's the thing that you would, like, what's the first thing that comes to mind that has changed since you got here 25 years ago that you like? And then, if you want to, what's the thing that you've seen change in the past 25 years that you don't like?
These are tough questions.
That's the segment. I'm so glad I remembered to do it.
I guess the like is that there are certain things that are more available.
Right.
So when I first moved here, the co-op was like so small.
Yeah.
It was next to the hardware store. It was, you know, nothing but bulk bins.
Right.
And now it's like this thriving, huge place.
Yeah.
You can go for anything. And there are things like that that I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate parts of the schools.
No, that's great. That's a good answer.
As someone who works at a public school.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
But all of my kids have gone through Pleasant Ridge.
Right.
Or Youth Initiative.
Right.
The school system has changed since then.
Yes.
To where the money that would go, to the public school is now going to those kids.
Right.
Which is cool, but problematic at the same time.
Yeah, it's a challenge for the public schools.
It is. It's a huge problem.
Yes.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, I remember when we couldn't do that.
Right.
And we had
and that was a different challenge.
We had to depend completely on fundraising.
Right.
For everything.
Right.
For all the things we wanted to do for Pleasant Ridge kids or for Youth Initiative kids. I mean, I taught at Youth Initiative for almost 10 years.
Right.
Like, it was great, and there was a sense of unity also because we were all in this boat together,
right?
Whether it was sinking or not. Like now, it's like with the what is that called? Where you can
school choice?
Yeah, the school choice thing with the school choice
vouchers,
thing,
whatever.
Yeah, the vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
With the vouchers, it's like there's in some ways you have less skin in the game,
right?
And it's also for sure taking away from the public schools.
It is, no doubt. And that, we could do a full hour, you and me, educational funding.
Yep.
But I guess just, you know, if you see either of us out around town and you want to talk about that's a joke. Okay, so do you want to answer the other half of the question, what you don't like?
What I don't like?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know you do.
Oh, you
know I know you do.
You
yeah,
know
come on,
I
man.
Do.
Come on,
you
don't know hold
I
back.
I bought my house for $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
In town here.
Yeah. And not even when you first got here.
No. This was... Nope. The first house I bought was in Lafarge.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge brick house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like super cheap.
Yeah.
I guess what I liked most about Viroqua when I first got here was there was this feeling of possibility.
Yeah.
And it was the when I say that, it's like you were going to make something happen.
Yeah.
And the people who were here with you were also going to make something happen, and mm-hmm. we were all excited about it, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like, to a certain extent, there are people who have moved here and just sort of like vulturous, you know, they've like zoomed in on what has already been established.
Right.
And not given a whole lot back.
There's less creating.
There's a whole lot less creating.
And maybe a little bit more taking.
There's a lot more taking, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the short answer.
Well, that's what we have time for. So yeah. I appreciate you making that available to me. We've got time for one more song here as we leave. This is another one of yours. This is You Were Right by Built to Spill.
Can I give an intro to it?
Of course, please.
So it took me years to figure out what the hell this song was about.
Okay.
Like I just didn't get it. But I'm a big lyrics guy.
Yeah.
Like, I love lyrics, and I will listen to a song over and over and over, and it's a puzzle to me. Like, that's why I love it. And this one is a good example of that. Like, this song is all about bands from the 60s making music about, you know, what they made music about. And, well, you can hear it in the lyrics.
All right. So this is You Were Right from Built to Spill. This has been The Friendly Show. Thank you, Pete, so much for being my guest. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
And I will be back in 2 weeks on Memorial Day with another guest and another hour of music and conversation. So until then, everybody, take care and enjoy.